Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with me, Delia Delore, the podcast where we explore, analyze, and break down popular mottos, mantras, and metaphors, tracing their use, meaning, and history. Each week, we have a special guest who resonates with their chosen expression. Today's guest is Maureen Chiana, an international award-winning speaker who has been recognized for her experience in neuroleadership and emotional intelligence. She's the ideal guest to help me to adjust to my week so far. You know, when you have so much to think about that you either go around in circles, get anxious, or just do nothing, that's where I'm at. Maureen's experience in our chosen metaphor, untying the Guardian knot, is going to be truly thought-provoking. Our metaphor for this week comes all the way from antiquity. In an Anatolian kingdom known as Phrygia, in modern-day West Central Turkey, was an ox cart tethered to a pole. The knot that bound them together was so tight, so twisted and mangled, that you couldn't see where it ended and where it began. It was an object of prophecy called the Gordian knot. Today, we will be retelling the legend of the Gordian knot, how it came to be, and how it came undone. We'll then look at how to cut a Gordian knot has come to mean overcoming seemingly impossible obstacles through brute force alone. We'll also look at what the suspect history of the phrase can tell us about the dangers of forcing simplistic explanations into complex problems. An oracle in the Phrygian capital city, Gordian, told the people they would soon have a new king who would ride into the city on a wagon. Moments later, Gordius, a farmer living in Phrygia, just happens to ride into the city in an ox cart. Well, the oracle had spoken. The people rejoiced as they pronounced that Gordius was now king of the entire kingdom. Now, you may be wondering, was the city already named Gordian after this unknown farmer? Or maybe you're questioning how many wagons must have entered that city each day and how readily the people crowned the next wagon driver who happened to roll in. Well, Gordius went to have a son called Midas, the very Midas who wished for everything he touched to turn to gold and was cursed with donkey ears by Apollo. So if this legend feels a little convenient and made up, that's because it probably is.
He saw how well treated his friend had been. He granted Midas a wish. Midas dreamt of being very rich. He asked that everything he touched should turn into gold. As Midas tried to eat the delicious food, it turned into gold. As soon as he reached out to his daughter, she too turned into gold. Midas realized how stupid he had been and begged Dionysus to take back the wish.
In thanks for his great fortune, Gordius dedicated the ox cart he was riding to the god Zeus, tying it to a post with apparently world-class navy knots. He tied the knots in knots, and soon it was such a tangled mess that it seemed impossible to undo. When Gorgias's line ended, a new prophecy emerged. One that said whoever was able to untie the Gordian knot would be destined to rule all of Asia. Many tried, many failed, but eventually enter Alexander the Great.
In 336 BC, he became king of the small Greek state of Macedonia, aged just 20. His tutor had been the great philosopher Aristotle. Inheriting both his father's powerful army and plans to invade the Persian Empire, Alexander launched one of the boldest campaigns in history, defeating the Persians in a string of brilliant battles, advancing thousands of miles to the Indian frontier, and founding around 70 cities on the way, most notably Alexandria in Egypt. He died in Babylon after a short illness, aged just 32.
Alexander, at this point, leading his Greek army across Anatolia as he conquered the Persian Empire, stopped his army in the city of Gordian. He had heard the legendary prophecy and, never one to miss a political propaganda opportunity, tried his hand at the knot. Alexander was many things, a warrior, leader, a bona fide supermodel, but a wise and deep thinker he was not. He tried to get the knot loose, but to no avail, given he was currently right in the middle of conquering all Asia. However, he couldn't really afford to give up.
But, seemingly enlightened by the gods, Alexander raised his sword and broke the knot that held the chariot to the pilaster. By cutting the Gordian knot, Alexander showed everyone that often a seemingly insoluble problem can be solved simply and easily. As had been prophesied, Alexander the Great conquered a huge empire and laid almost the entire known world at his feet.
Well, that's how the story goes. Mighty Alexander used cunning and strength to solve the puzzle of the Gordian knot in a way no one could have predicted. After all, nobody said how the knot had to come undone. Next, we will have a look at how the phrase to cut the Gordian knot is used today and how both Alexander the Great and modern users of the phrase seem to have missed the point entirely. First, though, we are joined by our special guest this week, whom we are excited to hear from. Hello, Maureen. Thank you so much for being a guest on Metaphorically Speaking.
It's such a pleasure, Delia, for being here. And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Not more than me. After reading so much about you, knowing all the things that you're up to, which we're going to be talking about to our listeners at the end. So make sure, listeners, that you stay with us so you'll hear more about Maureen. But of course, this show is all about metaphors. And the metaphor that we're going to be discussing today is untying the Gordian knot. Maureen, how does that saying resonate with you?
It's an interesting one, but it actually deeply resonates with me. You know, being someone that helps people rewire their brains using neuroscience, emotional intelligence, and scripture. So I have actually encountered many Gordian knots in my own lifetime, in my own life, but also in the life of people that I work with. It's one that I can deeply resonate with.
So what does it mean to you?
So untying the Gordian knot, for me, the Gordian knot really is a tangled knot. So something that really is more about issues, challenges, problems that are so knotted together. And it could be a combination of things that you can't really untangle in the normal way or natural way that we would do, but really need something different, a different kind of strategy to untangle. So that's my understanding.
Now, of course, having a scientific background, it could mean so many different things, not just the logical terminology of science and what science is about, because with science, there is this element of discovery and also having different solutions, different ways, routes to get to solutions. So how can you
think of the Gordian knot being kind of entangled in a scientific kind of methodology?
You see, one of the things that really stands out for me and something that I see a lot is, especially when people have issues or, you know, problems or under pressure or under challenges, a lot, what you find first and foremost are the thoughts, the thought processes that either go, you know, overboard. So you can have overthinking, you can have toxic thinking. So, and with thoughts comes emotions. So with that thought, then you have the emotion attached to it, which then can be a lot of emotions, or a lot of limiting emotions, toxic emotions. Then you add on the aspect of actions, because when you have a thought, it creates an emotion that makes you carry out an action. So when you really look at problems, the entanglement of thought process, and the problem with thoughts is that when you have a thought process, it can spiral out. The brain is an interesting organ that the question you ask the brain is the answer it will give you. So when you're having challenges, if you're focusing on the negative, then that's what you get back. And that thought process, I always say the brain is a great storyteller. So the brain can then create a narrative around it. In fact, different narratives that create an entanglement of emotions that then leads to a lot of actions or behavior patterns that you then find people exhibiting. So this, you know, so really all this can create what we call the Gordian knot, because you're then entangled in these actions, not knowing how to get back to you know, the result you want, because you're entangled in the emotions and the thought processes, and then you're carrying out these actions. And you know, it's the saying, you know, sometimes you find that I'm doing what I don't want to do, or I don't understand why I keep repeating the same actions. That's why.
Could you give us an example of a narrative?
And I'll use myself, actually. Let me start with me as an example. And one example that stands out for me was a season in my life when I lost my mom just after closing down my business. So I was in debt, I was grieving, and I was emotionally drained. So it wasn't one problem. It was a tight knot of financial fear, identity, confusion, spiritual exhaustion, frustration. There was a lot of emotions, and that led to me withdrawing completely, feeling ashamed, feeling vulnerable at the same time. And the way I describe it is I was at the bottom of a valley. So that tight knot of the emotions with the thoughts, with the actions, was a really Gordian knot for me at that point.
So how do you survive the Gordian knot? Because at the time you're in it, how would someone try to, because it just seems that there's so much to get on with.
Absolutely.
How do you begin to untie that?
Yeah, it is a lot. And that's the problem with when we're emotionally hijacked. When we're emotionally hijacked, what happens at that point is that the emotional part of the brain is activated. And when the emotional part of the brain is activated, it deactivates our thinking brain. It deactivates the part of the brain where we can solve problems. So what we really want to do is to calm down the emotional brain so that our prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that helps us solve problems, that helps us make intentional decisions, can be reactivated. So the best thing to do at that point is really, it's really focusing on the strategy, on calming that emotional brain. There are so many ways of doing it, depending on what the issue is. You know, for me at that point, it was focusing on my emotions and thought process. And it was asking myself the question, how do I change this, the narrative of I'm a failure, the narrative of this, you know, that I'm not good enough for running a business. How do I change that narrative? And it was asking the question, is that true? No, I'm not a failure. I ran a business, ran into issues and had problems and had to close the business, but I've learned so much from that experience. So changing that narrative then helps calm down the emotional brain. So rather than slicing through it in frustration, what you then do is kind of lean into the discomfort with grace and strategy. So it's really looking at that emotional part, looking at the thought process. And this is really what I call rewiring the brain. So what you need to do is, first and foremost, be aware of the thought processes that you're having and change the narrative. So reframe them. Reframe them to the truth and not the fear-based narrative. And then when you reframe them, repeating that reframe, because repetition is what rewires the brain, repeating that reframe that you have will create new emotions that will then enable you to create new actions. And you find your brain really calm down and you're able to then navigate. In my situation, that was exactly what I did. So instead, I had to start looking to manage the overwhelm. And most importantly, for me, for me specifically, I turned to scripture for clarity and strength. You know, using different scriptures like trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, that I held on to. I said, okay, Lord, I need you to show me the way through this. That season eventually gave birth to what I do today, which is the Mindsight Academy and the work I do in empowering others. So it's really paying attention first, awareness, then reframe, then keep repeating it till you then achieve the results you want.
You know, listening to your explanation, it made me think that when I thought of untying the Gordian knot, I see it as a negative, I see it as issues. And listening to you, I started to think maybe it's a type of anxiety. But your explanation made me feel that the metaphor untying the Gordian knot could actually be the positive side of being anxious. Because although you're in a critical state of worry and stress, if you recognize it and also utilize the saying of untying the knot, it may be less scary than saying to yourself, oh, I suffer with anxiety. Oh, I'm suffering with stress, which to me, when you say it that way, it just feels like it is a situation, but it's not inviting you to deal with the situation. However, if you think of the metaphor untying, it means that you're going to be acting, you're going to be trying to do something to release and relieve your pressure. Can you see where I'm coming from with my...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And what you're saying is so true. Because when you're saying things like, oh, I'm anxious, I'm overwhelmed, you're focusing on the negative. And there's a saying, what you focus on expands. Whatever you tell your brain is what your brain would do. So when you're focusing on the actual result of the problem, so you're focusing on what you don't want, which is the overwhelm. That is, you find yourself even being more overwhelmed because you keep focusing on what has made you to be overwhelmed. But when you focus on, like we said, untying, so it's untying the Gordian knot, but instead of focusing on the Gordian knot, we're now focusing on the action, untying it. And then you'd start thinking about, okay, what do I do to get out of this? Or what do I do to untie the knot? What do I do? So the knot needs to be untied to free me. So the focus then becomes on the untying. So absolutely. And it's really, and this comes to perspective, in every situation that we're in, we have a choice on what we decide to do or what we decide to focus on. So, you know, it's that saying, you see the world not as it is, but as you are. So you see the world based on how you are wired. So if you are focusing on what you don't want, you keep getting what you don't want. But if you focus on what you want, then your brain is open to then give you suggestions, to give you ideas of what you want to help you get out of the situation. But when you start focusing on what you don't want, your brain will give you that same suit. It will give you the answers. And that is still tangling you up in what you don't want. And the truth is, all our brain is trying to do is to protect us from what it perceives to be a threat. So it only does what it, you know, it can only work with information it has. So that is why that awareness is so important. What am I thinking? And asking the question, is this thought true? Is it helpful? Is it empowering? And if it's not, change it.
Wow. Well, of course, now I have to ask you to tell our listeners more about the Mindsight Academy. And I think that they would have heard by your responses that you obviously have a very deep passion with the mind. So tell us more.
Yeah, so the Mindsight Academy is an academy I set up about 7-8 years ago. So like I explained previously, I had gone through the issue of having to close a business in 2006, and that got me into a bad place. But it was in that overwhelm that made me start asking the question, how do I get out of this? And the solution was neuroscience. So I learned how to rewire the brain. Literally, what the Mindsight Academy does is teaches people how to understand their brain and how to rewire it to achieve the results you want. So there's an academy that has courses, but inside there, I've also got what I call the Mindsight Women's Network, which is a network for women where we use the same principles of neuroscience, emotional intelligence, but with the added element of scripture to it. So in the academy, you can find courses for leadership. Mainly my focus has always been on leadership, but you can also have, join the network for women. And I'm also on LinkedIn quite a lot. So if you want to find out more about what I do, you can, follow me on LinkedIn, or connect with me rather on LinkedIn. And and I've got a YouTube channel that I tend to post on quite a bit as well, and a podcast called Lead to Excel podcast.
Wonderful. You know, with the Mindsight Academy, is there any areas that you could say people could describe it as an alternative to counseling?
What the Mindsight Academy does, because the focus for me is really giving people the understanding first. So the Mindsight Academy is a training platform, but we also use coaching. So we train you. So you've got the content with the training, and then I also provide one-to-one coaching with it. And so it's a combination, because you see, there's something I've been talking a lot about rewiring the brain. It's a process, and everybody is so different. So what has created the Gordian knot for one person will be different from another. So how to untie it will be different. Even if it looks the same, the reasoning behind it or what caused the tie will be different. So that's why the training comes in. And then the coaching is what I then use to help people or corporates or teams to then untangle. So to then achieve the results, to use the knowledge, to put it into action. So that's where the coaching comes in. The only difference with the Mindsight Women's Network is that then there's a community, because it's a membership program. So we have a community. So we meet, we have group coaching, and then they also have individual coaching.
I'm glad that you explained it that way, because I had said counseling, but really coaching was the more appropriate word. Great. Now, you also mentioned...
I'm just going to say it's brain-based coaching. So it's neuro coaching as opposed to life coaching or things like that. Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification. You mentioned that you can be contacted on LinkedIn. Is it via your name or via the academy?
It's both. So you can find me as Maureen Chiana on LinkedIn, and also you can find the Mindsight Academy. So you can find both. So either would work.
Maureen, thank you so much for being a guest on Metaphorically Speaking. You've given me, and I'm sure my listeners, a lot to think about.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you to our special guest for the week. Thank you for your interesting views and stories. Now it's time to return to our metaphor for the week, cutting the Gordian knot. Let's say you're planning your summer holidays with your family. You want a cultured escape into a new country full of sightseeing and museums. Your partner, however, prefers to lie on the beach and soak up the sun with a chilled cocktail and a good book. At the same time, your children might want an action-packed adventure, doing exciting activities and trying new things. At first glance, it would feel impossible to give everyone the holiday they want. However, you might cut the Gordian knot by paying through the nose for an all-inclusive resort holiday 10 minutes from an historic city. Through sheer force of monetary input, you've got sun, activities and culture all within reach. Now, there is another version of this story in which Alexander cleverly pulls out the linchpin from the pole the cart was fastened to. This exposed the ends of the rope and allowed Alex to untie the knot properly. This is certainly a generous version of events compared to the cut-in with a sword version. At the same time, imagine the strength one would need to cut through tangled knots with a single blow. Our writer for this week, Laurie Warplington, is convinced that these two conflicting accounts reveal an inconvenient possibility that neither version is real. He invites you instead to picture Alex hacking at the rope with his sword for minutes on end, sweat dripping down his brow, his army awkwardly looking on. Finally, almost in tears, he soars through the last few threads and technically solves the puzzle.
He conquers vast territories, his name etched in history. But did he rely on a little spin? Alexander is known for his military genius, but some of his victories might have been a bit exaggerated. Back then, rulers often spread propaganda about their achievements. Stories of Alexander conquering fire-breathing lions or invincible armies might have been more myth than reality. Imagine facing a tiny, angry dog and later claiming it was a ferocious beast. Maybe history writers just got a little carried away.
Do you imagine the people of Gordian were convinced by Alex's workaround? Or did they watch their new overlord cheat on an ancient puzzle and then parade around like he'd solved it? If he had embarrassed himself by needing to saw through the rope with his sword, the chroniclers of the time may have had a strong incentive to remember the more favourable version of events. History is written by the victors and then rewritten by their successors until history becomes propaganda, becomes myth.
Do you know why people like comforting lies over unpleasant truths? There are many psychological and social reasons for that. Some of them are cognitive dissonance. When people encounter information that conflicts with their existing beliefs or attitudes, they may experience cognitive dissonance, which is a feeling of mental discomfort or psychological stress. To reduce this discomfort, they may reject the new information or find ways to rationalize it, which may involve believing in comforting lies. Confirmation bias. People may be more likely to seek out information that confirms their existing beliefs or attitudes, rather than information that challenges them. So, people are only exposed to information that reinforces their beliefs and believe in comforting lies that support their worldview. Emotional comfort. People may find it emotionally comforting to believe in comforting lies, even if they are not true. For example, a person may believe in the afterlife because the idea of their loved ones continuing to exist brings them comfort.
After the death of Alexander, his newly built empire was almost immediately torn apart in the wars of the Diadochi. This was when Alexander's generals each claimed to be his true successor and seized provinces for themselves. Between them, these successors ruled most of the world that was known to them, and it was in all of their interests to perpetuate and build on the legend of Alexander. After all, their own legacy to rule depended on his legacy. In fact, Ptolemy I, one of Alexander's generals, stole Alexander's corpse when it was en route back to Macedonia, using it to legitimize his rule over Egypt. After Rome and Persia conquered these kingdoms, Every strongman and dictator for the next few centuries inherited these stories and continued to use Alexander the Great as the ideal ruler and conqueror to aspire to.
First Julius Caesar and then Augustus would visit Alexander's tomb to pay their respects. Augustus, according to one account, breaking off Alexander's nose by accident. Both neglected the nearby Ptolemaic tombs. In their eyes, only Alexander was worthy of admiration. When asked whether he would like to see the bodies of the Ptolemies, Augustus replied, "I came to see a king, not a bunch of corpses."
There is a lesson here for us all. Historical narratives can tend to tie themselves up into knots with revisions, conflicting narratives and missing pieces. It can be tempting to cut through the confusion with a simplistic narrative that neatly explains the complexity away. However, once you cut through the facts, you lose the ability to truly see how things fit together. What's more, whilst your easy explanation might be good enough for you, others might not buy into your narrative so easily. Many thanks to our wonderful guests for this week and for all their insightful contributions. Thank you as well to you, our audience, for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Metaphorically Speaking. We hope you've learned something new. Let us know on our socials how you interpret the saying, cutting the Gordian knot. We would truly love to hear your thoughts. And don't forget, if you'd like to suggest a metaphor for an upcoming show, you can reach out to us at colourful.com/shows/Delia. And we'd love you to share the show with your friends or leave a review on colourful.com or on our podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, which is on Apple, Spotify, and all major streaming platforms. If you prefer getting in touch by mail, please do so at info@metaphorically-speaking.uk. Please help us to grow. Join us for another metaphor next week. I'm Delia Delore. Until then, keep safe. Goodbye.